getting started. So why is the philosophy of social science interesting? Why is it important? That's a good question. Some philosophical topics are of interest to philosophers, but not of interest to other people. But I believe the philosophy of social science is really a very important discipline, and it's important especially to social scientists. So my first answer to why is philosophy of social science important is I believe that the philosophy of social science can make social science research better and more effective. It can lead to better knowledge and better understanding. So that's my main reason for being so interested in the philosophy of social science. But here's another reason. I believe, and I have been interested in social science research ever since graduate school, I believe that social science, we do not understand the social sciences or the challenge of the social sciences very well. We understand very well chemistry or biology. In other words, we understand what it is to have a scientific theory of atoms and elements and chemistry. We understand what it is to have a scientific theory of the motions of the planets, astronomy. Those sciences are conceptually easy to understand. I believe the social sciences are much harder to understand. They're more varied, for example. A sociologist is asking very different questions from a demographer, a population theorist, who's asking very different questions from a political scientist. So each of the disciplines is asking a very different set of problems, so that creates complexity. How can they all be part of social science if they're all asking these very different questions? Well, I think we can answer that, but that's one reason why philosophy of social science is important. But maybe more than that, the phenomena of the social, the phenomena of social reality, is more difficult to understand than natural phenomena. When I traveled to Beijing a week ago, I've been in Beijing just 1 week, so I'm still absorbing the lessons and the tastes and the traffic and the good food, and I'm observing all of that. But it's only been a week for me. But here's one thing I know. I know that Beijing, you might say, what is Beijing? It is a city. That's what it is. But that's way too simple, because a city is a very complex social entity. It is a population, to start with. So it's a population of, I don't know, 12 million people? Is it more than that? Is it more than 12 million? 30? I'm shocked. 30 million people. It's a huge population. But it's a population. You might say, well, it's not just a city, it is a population. It is a group of people, a large group of people. But that's not good enough either. It is an organization that has policemen. So you see them on the street. They wear a certain color of uniform. So you know that they are part of a social organization of some kind. And you then make an inference. There is a city government. And then you see government buildings, and you realize government is not just about the management of Beijing. It is also an organization or institution which governs a whole country. So now we've got a city, we've got a very large population, and we can now begin going off in many different directions. The political organization of the city, how do the policemen keep the traffic moving and keep the bicyclists out of the way of the cars? How do they do that? Well, they don't do it very well, actually. That's one line of thought we could go. We could go in the line of thought that says, what about the relationship between the police authority and the relevant ministry? What kind of relationships are those? That's also part of Beijing. So that's in other words, the point I'm getting at is that the social reality of the city of Beijing is deep, complex, nested is a word that I would use in English. I don't know if it would make sense in Chinese. Something is nested if it's contained within. I don't know. Does that make sense? It's probably too metaphorical a word. But the idea is that there is the ministry of something. There are the sub-bureaus or offices. Within each bureau, there are then further bureaus or smaller offices, which then communicate to other places. That is what I would call a nested system, where the parts feed up into the whole. But that's just one part. That's the political part. What about the sociology of Beijing? What about the fact there are lots and lots of immigrant workers in Beijing and the surrounding countryside? That's true, isn't it? Lots of migrant workers in Beijing, or maybe I'm wrong about that. Are there a lot of immigrant people working in this city from other parts of the country? Population. The point I'm trying to get at is that the population itself is structured. So there are the university people, there are the people who work for city government, there are the people who work for industries and factories. In other words, we can break apart the social reality of Beijing in many different ways. And the social sciences can study all of those ways. But the difficulty in my mind is that social scientists often don't recognize, you know, kind of how complex that social reality is. Mm-hmm.
If you talk about the population of Beijing, I don't know if you hear 户口.
Mm-hmm.
户口.
No.
That's important.
What is hukou? A registration system? Is it registration? Yeah, go ahead. Okay, so your point is that if you're not registered, then you're not legally permitted to be here.
Because in the population of Beijing, a lot of people, it comes from other cities or other provinces, and registered.
Yes, excellent.
Permanent resident. Yeah, that's an important thing.
Yes.
For the people, especially the other city or other province, because if you get registered for permanent residence, you will get some
social services.
Your children can get
right.
good schools.
Yes.
And you can get cheaper houses. If you talk about the population of Beijing, I think the hukou is very important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes very good sense to me. And it's a good example of what I'm talking about, which is that it's necessary as a social scientist to begin to break apart the general statement. Instead of talking about the population, you can now talk about the legal population, the registered population, and the unregistered population. You can talk about the circumstances of life. You mentioned that the unregistered population do not have access to schooling in the same way, do not have access to state or social services in the same way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Yes. Okay, that's very, very good. Now, what all of this has to do with is I'm wanting to make, you know, kind of clear in your minds why the social sciences need philosophy. Because we need to have, great, Let's finish this thought, though. So the thought is, what we were talking about, why is philosophy of social science important? And what I was saying is, it's important partly because social reality is difficult to understand. It's not like, you know, chemistry, just a few simple processes. It's many complex processes which can be studied in many different ways. It can be studied statistically, descriptively, sociologically, or description of institutions, description of history. In other words, there are many different ways of talking about and of analyzing and of trying to understand the dynamics of development of a city like Beijing. And until we get a better idea, kind of a better handle on how to conceptualize those social issues, we won't do very good social science. That's really the bottom line for me. How can we do better social science? And I've now talked with people at Peking University, just in conversations, many of whom have said, this is a thing we would like to really work on, is making better social science for China. And you might say, why is that important? It's so important because social change requires social policy, and it requires knowledge. And if we have better social science, then we can design better social policies, better population policies, better traffic policies. Let me ask you one little question. When you drive around in Beijing, the bicycles just go right in front of you. Now, why is that? Why do you think that is? It's a custom. That's one possibility. So this would be an explanation that there is a custom of bad bicycle riding. Though actually, I was in Beijing 5 years ago, and it was not nearly so bad. Bicyclists were more orderly. They stayed in their lane. So the custom, you know, by this point-to-point observation, would suggest the custom is a brand new custom. I don't know if that's true or not. I've heard a different explanation. It's an explanation about rationality and rational choice and institutions. What I've been told is that the traffic regulations have been changed, and that if a motorist hits a bicyclist, it doesn't matter who's at fault, the motorist has to pay the bicyclist. Is that true? Does that make sense? Now, what kind of behavior does that elicit from the driver and from the bicyclist? How would the bicyclist behave given that set of incentives, that set of legal arrangements, and how would the driver arrange? Not arrange, how would the driver behave? Just think about that. Does the bicyclist have a huge incentive to stay in his lane? No, because if he's hit by a car, he may get a big cash settlement. So he may actually benefit from being a bad driver. The motorist, on the other hand, I have noticed that some motorists are being very, very careful. When people drive me around, they always stop for the bicycle, and it makes traffic very difficult. What I'm getting at is this is one concrete example of incentives and institutions. The institution of putting all the liability on the driver is an institution that leads to bad bicycle behavior. I'm asserting that, though I don't insist that it's true. I'm just putting it forward as kind of an example of social behavior. It's social behavior. Change the rules and you get a change in behavior, and sometimes a very undesirable change in behavior. Have you ever heard of a banking scandal in this country? In the United States, we have banking scandals all the time. You know what banking scandals are? When a bank makes bad financial judgments and gives a lot of money to people who want to borrow it to make businesses, but then they just take the money and they don't make the business. And the bank is giving out a lot of money, and then the bank goes bust, goes bankrupt. I would refer to that as a scandal, as corruption. But the question is, what is the institutional setting in which bankers, auditors, borrowers are operating, and what is the form of action, the form of behavior, the form of choice, which corresponds to the borrower, the lender, the overseer? Well, the point I'm getting at is it's all social behavior, and the best way of understanding social behavior is by trying to identify the underlying incentives and rules and opportunities that exist within the system. For me, that's really a very basic, a basic insight into how the social sciences work. Okay, I'm just so pleased that we are able to use the computer. It's very exciting. It might be, maybe I should mention that the example I just gave you of the bicycles and the drivers and the rules, for me, it's a really important example, even though I just came up with it at this moment, because it's an example that illustrates the working back and forth between an institution and the behavior of the people who are involved in that institution. So the institution in this case is traffic laws and transportation. People want to go places, they take their bicycles and their cars, and they make decisions, be more cautious or less cautious, yield to the bicycle, intimidate the bicycle. They're making choices, and the way that the institution is arranged will change the cost and benefit of one choice or the other. And you can therefore predict there will be major changes in behavior. In this case, bicyclists getting out of control, and the cars can't navigate at all because every time they try to move, another bicycle jumps in front of them. Okay, good. Okay, let's go on to the first lecture. The first lecture. And by the way, the cool thing about starting as we have done, we're going to do the same lecture next week too, but you're going to be so much better prepared for it because you will already have heard and thought about some of the issues. Okay. Is it better to turn off the light now? But nobody goes to sleep. That's our deal. Boy, it's so dark. Okay. Let's finish this thought, though. So the thought is what we were talking about, why is philosophy of social science important? And what I was saying is it's important partly because social reality is difficult to understand. It's not like, you know, chemistry, just a few simple processes. It's many complex processes which can be studied in many different ways. It can be studied statistically, descriptively, sociologically, or description of institutions, description of history. In other words, there are many different ways of talking about and of analyzing and of trying to understand the dynamics of development of a city like Beijing. And until we get a better idea, kind of a better handle on how to conceptualize those social issues, we won't do very good social science. That's really the bottom line for me. How can we do better social science? And I've now talked with people at Peking University, just in conversations, many of whom have said, this is a thing we would like to really work on, is making better social science for China. And you might say, why is that important? It's so important because social change requires social policy, and it requires knowledge. And if we have better social science, then we can design better social policies, better population policies, better traffic policies. Let me ask you one little question. When you drive around in Beijing, the bicycles just go right in front of you. Now, why is that? Why do you think that is? It's a custom. That's one possibility. So this would be an explanation that there is a custom of bad bicycle riding. Though actually, I was in Beijing 5 years ago, and it was not nearly so bad. Bicyclists were more orderly. They stayed in their lane. So the custom, you know, by this point-to-point observation, would suggest the custom is a brand new custom. I don't know if that's true or not. I've heard a different explanation. It's an explanation about rationality and rational choice and institutions. What I've been told is that the traffic regulations have been changed, and that if a motorist hits a bicyclist, it doesn't matter who's at fault, the motorist has to pay the bicyclist. Is that true? Does that make sense? Now, what kind of behavior does that elicit from the driver and from the bicyclist? how would the bicyclist behave given that set of incentives, that set of legal arrangements, and how would the driver arrange? How would the driver behave? Just think about that. Does the bicyclist have a huge incentive to stay in his lane? No, because if he's hit by a car, he may get a big cash settlement. So he may actually benefit from being a bad driver. The motorist, on the other hand, I have noticed that some motorists are being very, very careful. When people drive me around, they always stop for the bicycle, and it makes traffic very difficult. What I'm getting at is this is one concrete example of incentives and institutions. The institution of putting all the liability on the driver is an institution that leads to bad bicycle behavior. I'm asserting that, though I don't insist that it's true. I'm just putting it forward as kind of an example of social behavior. It's social behavior. Change the rules and you get a change in behavior, and sometimes a very undesirable change in behavior. Have you ever heard of a banking scandal in this country? In the United States, we have banking scandals all the time. You know what banking scandals are? When a bank makes bad financial judgments and gives a lot of money to people who want to borrow it to make businesses, but then they just take the money and they don't make the business. And the bank is giving out a lot of money, and then the bank goes bankrupt. I would refer to that as a scandal, as corruption. But the question is, what is the institutional setting in which bankers, auditors, borrowers are operating, and what is the form of action, the form of behavior, the form of choice, which corresponds to the borrower, the lender, the overseer? Well, the point I'm getting at is it's all social behavior, and the best way of understanding social behavior is by trying to identify the underlying incentives and rules and opportunities that exist within the system. For me, that's really a very basic basic insight into how the social sciences work. Okay, I'm just so pleased that we are able to use the computer. It's very exciting. It might be, maybe I should mention that the example I just gave you of the bicycles and the drivers and the rules, for me, it's a really important example, even though I just came up with it at this moment, because it's an example that illustrates the working back and forth between an institution and the behavior of the people who are involved in that institution. So the institution in this case is traffic laws and transportation. People want to go places, they take their bicycles and their cars, and they make decisions. Be more cautious or less cautious. Yield to the bicycle, intimidate the bicycle. They're making choices. And the way that the institution is arranged will change the cost and benefit of one choice or the other. And you can therefore predict there will be major changes in behavior. In this case, bicyclists getting out of control, and the cars can't navigate at all because every time they try to move, another bicycle jumps in front of them.